Juliet Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello, and welcome to episode 92 of Dogcast Radio. In this show, we talk to a woman who organises group walks for toy dogs.
It gives some people that might not have the opportunity to walk their dog safely in London parks the opportunity to come along, make friends and have a lot of fun with their little dogs.
Plus, we have the Dogcast Radio news and a fiction feature. But before all that, we're bombarded with messages about keeping our own hearts healthy. But did you know dogs can have heart disease too? I talked to Melanie Powell, who works in the cardiology department at the University of Florida Veterinary Medical Center, about dilated cardiomyopathy. So the first thing I needed to know was just what is dilated cardiomyopathy?
Dilated cardiomyopathy is a condition where the heart muscle loses its ability to contract normally and effectively. And this disease can lead to heart enlargement, congestive heart failure because the heart is not functioning properly, and it can also lead to sudden death because of ventricular arrhythmias.
Yeah, yeah. That's beating out of rhythm, is it? The
mm-hmm.
last one. Yeah, yeah. Okay,
yeah.
So we're talking about a serious disease.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. And is this something that sort of, does it come with the onset, you know, old age in a dog, or what causes it?
Not necessarily. It is known to be genetic, or it's thought to be genetic, in giant or large breed dogs such as Dobermans, Irish Wolfhounds, Great Danes, and even Boxers.
Hmm.
And the thing about it is that it is an acquired disease, so it could show up at any time. It's not something that they're born with.
Yeah.
But it's something that does come on with I guess, age. But it can show up as young as 2 years old.
Crikey, yeah. So you say they're not born with it. So are they born with a predisposition to it?
A predisposition to it, yes.
Right, okay. So you work in sort of, you offer a cardiomyopathy clinic. So what's
yes,
that? What does that do?
Basically, it's a screening. For breeds that are predisposed, like I said, the large breed and the giant breeds. And basically, it's at a discounted price of $150 per dog or cat, because we also screen cats for hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, but that's a whole different topic. what we do is we do a brief cardiac physical exam where you listen to their heart, check their mucous membranes, evaluate their pulses for quality and synchronization, and then we'll also do an echocardiogram, which is a ultrasound at the heart. So that gives you a better picture of what's going on, as far as if there's any contractility abnormalities or any type of murmurs. You can see the valves clearly, so you can see if there's any type of regurgitation, abnormal flow, and anything like that.
Yeah, yeah. So that's going to give you a picture of whether they've got any problems,
mm-hmm.
you know, currently or even developing.
Yes. And another thing that we like to do for our DCM dogs for screening is we do a 24-hour Holter monitor.
Yeah.
Which is an ECG that we put on them for 24 hours, and it gives us an idea of what the heart is doing, the electrical activity over that 24 hours. And there's a thing that they call occult DCM, which the dogs are not clinical. They're not showing any type of signs or anything, but you can see an abnormal rhythm sometimes. So a lot of times you can catch it there first.
Yeah, yeah. And sort of is there an effective treatment for it?
There is treatment for it. The treatment plan is usually tailored based on how they present with their clinical signs, but there is no cure, unfortunately.
Yeah. Mm. And what is the sort of, presumably they're going to have a sort of a shorter life, or is it that if you catch
yeah.
it? Yeah, yeah, so it does, mm-hmm. yeah.
I mean, medications and everything can slow the process and hopefully keep them out of heart failure for longer, but eventually it is a fatal disease.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I know you've mentioned that sort of one of your aims is to sort of help breeders keep this out of their lines. Mm-hmm. So when you come across this problem in a dog, how do you then move forward with the breeder?
We tell them, you know, if their dog shows up with signs, they will discontinue the breeding program with that specific animal and then go through their lines typically. And any animal that came from that animal, they will pretty much stop the breeding as well.
Yeah, yeah. So what's the best age for a breeder to bring their dog to you?
We usually actually start pretty young just to get a baseline before there's any problems. So we'll get a picture of what the heart looks like when it's normal, before it has any problems. So this way, if there are any later down the line, we can compare it. So usually about 1 to 2 years old to get a baseline. And then they can do either yearly echocardiograms or Holter monitors, kind of interchangeably.
Yeah, yeah. That's interesting, the monitor, because I've heard of that with people with, mm-hmm. mainly with sort of blood pressure problems, you know, when you have sort of mobile blood pressure and yeah. they want to get the picture of it. So if you have a dog in the lab and it's standing there, you know, is it possible that it wouldn't present problems? Whereas if it was out on a run and getting, you know, mm-hmm. a strenuous workout.
And that's why we do the 24-hour Holter, because the dog goes home in their natural environment and they're wearing this kind of like with a, kind of like they have like a little backpack kind of vest, and they're wearing this Holter, so they get to go home and experience their normal activity, whether they go for long walks with their owners or, you know, they play with their other dogs. So you get a good picture over 24 hours, and it records the whole 24 hours.
Yeah.
So if they are having an arrhythmia, which you may miss in hospital over, you know, a 5-minute ECG strip, you'll be able to see them on the 24-hour recording device.
Yeah, yeah. And is it the case, you know, as with some conditions in humans, will the dog then have to sort of, I don't know how much stress dogs have, but will the owner need to create a sort of stress-free environment for them and make life as easy for them?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously when they start having symptoms and stuff, and you want to keep their activity limited, because excessive heart rates can not necessarily cause ventricular arrhythmias when they have this problem, but they can definitely exacerbate them.
Yeah, yeah. So keep sort of take them on gentle walks and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm, yeah, you don't want to take them on 5-mile runs.
Yeah, yeah. So it is important then. You know, it's not one of those things that you want to bury your head in the sand and say, oh, I don't want to know. You need to know so that you can give the dog the best shot at a longer life,
definitely.
Don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah.
And if you catch it early, you can slow the progression.
Yeah, yeah. And as you say then, breeders need to know that so that they can then go and follow up other lines and sort of maybe say to other people, you don't need to breed that dog. We've got a problem.
Yes, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. Okay, so it's not preventative, but we can, not cure, but sort of make the dog live with it.
Make the dog more comfortable and have a better quality of life.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, you were working on a brochure, because one of the things you want to do is sort of get the word out to breeders, don't you, to come and see you?
It is still in the approval process, unfortunately. I have it ready, but because we're a university, everything has to be uniform, and so it's actually still in the approval process.
Yeah, yeah. But it one of the things you seek to do, isn't it, that to get the word out to breeders that this is something they
definitely
need to. Yeah, yeah. So,
and our plans for the brochure to send them out to different animal hospitals and boarding facilities even, you know, just so that the owners of these dogs, of these predisposed breeds, you know, can see, oh, well, maybe they'll look the brochure over and be like, I didn't know about this, so maybe it's something I should look into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And presumably as well, if you are looking to buy one of those breeds, you know, not as a breed, if you're looking to be an owner of one of those breeds, you need to go to a breeder that's aware of this problem.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. Otherwise, you're setting yourself up for heartache, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you feel that we've covered everything we need to, or do you think there's anything else that you'd like to say about cardiomyopathy?
I guess the only thing I'd like to add is maybe the dates of the clinics that we have coming up.
Mm-hmm.
We have one on September 25th, and one on November 13th. And the new schedule will probably be coming up within the next month. The September 1 and the November 1, we're not seeing as many dogs as we'd like to see. We're seeing mostly cats. So if we can get some more, you know, Great Danes and Doberman breeders out there, that would be great.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, and is there a website that people can find out more about this?
We have a website that has a cardiology section for the university.
Yep, great.
It is www.vetmed.usl.edu.
You can find out more about the clinic and cardiomyopathy at that website, which we have a link to on the Dogcast Radio site. If you have a dog that's been affected by heart disease, or you're a breeder who is having their dogs screened, we'd love to hear from you. You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com. Poodles are rated second and Papillons eighth in the top 10 most intelligent dog breeds. The Best Medicine of All, written and read by Julie Hill. Harry sat in his comfy chair, surrounded by his friends. The TV burbled away in the corner, but he wasn't really watching. It would be lunch soon, then a lovely cup of tea. The nurse would bring him his tablets with a drink of water, and then it would be time for the best medicine of all. When Harry hadn't been able to cope on his own, for one reason and another, it was decided that the best thing all round was for him to go into a home where he could be looked after. He would have company all day, he wouldn't have to cook or shop, he'd have nothing at all to worry about. His dog, Cindy, a 12-year-old Jack Russell Cross, had gone to live with his daughter, Sue. Sue had a dog of her own that Cindy got along with well, so she was happy there. But Sue also had a husband, two children, and a busy life. She had brought Cindy to visit Harry. In fact, she had brought her every weekend to begin with. Then she missed a few. Then it was once a month. And now she hadn't been for quite a while. She phoned and sent photos of Cindy having fun in her new life, which Harry pinned to his bedroom wall proudly and looked at each night as he fell asleep. He was glad his dog was happy and had adjusted to life without him, but boy did he miss her. And that was where Zebedee came in. Zebedee was a 3-year-old Springer Spaniel. He was named after a character in a children's television programme who bounced around on a spring. Zebedee bounced around very well without the aid of any springs, and Harry loved his most energetic visitor. On warm days, he would make it out into the garden and throw a few tennis balls for Zebedee. A couple of times, he had even strolled slowly down the street with Zebedee and his owner. Harry had gripped Zebedee's lead tightly and proudly. It made him feel so good to walk a dog again. On days when Harry wasn't feeling so good, Zebedee sat with his head resting tenderly in Harry's lap, his soulful eyes trained on Harry's face, listening intently to every word he said. Though Harry was usually quiet, he always had plenty to say to Zebedee, and the dog took it all in. If he could have written, that dog could have produced a comprehensive biography of the old man. So Harry had his lunch, his lovely cup of tea, and he swallowed his tablets dutifully. He didn't ask what they did to him. He didn't want to know, so long as they kept him going. Then it was time, and here was Zebedee. Harry petted him and sneaked him the bits of his lunch he'd saved especially for him. He wandered out into the garden with him and sat on a bench in the sunshine. There were no tennis balls that day, but Harry watched as Zebedee had a thorough sniff around. Then Zebedee leapt up beside him on the bench. He flopped onto his back, wriggling against Harry's leg as he petted the dog on his belly. Harry told him some things, like how the pain in his back was getting worse these days, and how the television series he'd been watching had turned out, and how one of the nurses was going to be off on maternity leave soon. Harry talked and petted, and Zebedee wriggled and listened. Then, too soon, it was time for Zebedee to leave. His owner told Harry that she had a school to visit with Zebedee the next day. Zebedee got to see lots of different places in his capacity as a therapy dog. He'd had to pass a simple examination by an official to prove he was a friendly dog who wouldn't overreact to the unexpected and so on. And then he got to accompany his owner to hospitals, schools and homes like Harry's. It didn't take too much out of his owner's day to fit in. And to Zebedee, it was fun, getting to meet and be petted by so many people. As Zebedee trotted out beside his owner, a nurse put a hand out and stopped them. "I just wanted to thank you for coming," she said. "It makes such a difference to our residents." Zebedee didn't know what she was saying, but her tone was friendly, so he wagged his tail at her enthusiastically. The nurse grinned at him and squatted to pet him. She stood again and said, "Poor old Harry." They both regarded the old man, now settled in an armchair, for a snooze. "He came in over a year ago, and the doctors," she lowered her voice, "the doctors gave him 6 months to live at most. Well, he's still here, and he lives for your dog's visits." She looked down at Zebedee, who was looking up at her, mouth open, tongue slightly out in a happy grin, tail still wagging hopefully. "Oh, yes, Zebedee," she said. "You're the best medicine of all." That was The Best Medicine of All, written and read by Julie Hill. Famous toy dog owners include historical figures like Queen Victoria and Winston Churchill, and more modern celebrities such as Jennifer Lopez and Madonna. Now, how do you feel about little dogs? Are you a big fan of small breeds? Or maybe you're not so keen? Well, whichever you are, the next interview is for you. Michelle organises the toy dog group Ruby Scrumptious. So if you think toy breeds are terrific, you'll love her. And if your favourite breeds are big breeds, well, she wants a word with you too. First of all, what is the group all about?
I run a Chihuahua and toy dog group at mainly based around Greenwich, but we have members in London and the home counties and even further afield as far as the West Midlands. We're basically a group for socialising, and we also offer, you know, basic training, socialisation for small breeds, and it gives some people that might not have the opportunity to walk their dogs safely in London parks the opportunity to come along, make friends and have a lot of fun with their little dogs.
Yeah, yeah. Now, there are specific sort of training and socialising issues with toy dogs, aren't there?
You know, issues that affect dogs, all breeds of dogs, but they do seem to be more prevalent with the smaller dogs, particularly aggression and nervousness.
Yeah. Do you find that some owners sort of are quite surprised to realise that toy dogs, you know, can be trained very successfully?
I think, unfortunately, that there's not all toy dog owners, but there's an element in toy dog owners that seem to think that the dogs, because they're tiny, they won't require any training and they don't require socialisation. So, you know, because it is a tiny dog, particularly some of the people that live in smaller apartments around London, they may think, you know, that type of dog is quite easy to have because they have to do less with it, which isn't actually the case. You know, you would still need to do the same amount of training and socialisation, really, as if you had a Rottweiler puppy with any toy breed. And unfortunately, what we see afterwards is that a lot of these dogs are, you know, come 6 months to a year, they start behaving naughtily and then it becomes a problem. They might snap at people or snap at other dogs. Or if the owner's never had a small dog before or any dog before, then obviously this becomes an issue and that's where it's more important for them. So I think at that point, you know, we see a lot of people coming to us for help at that point because they don't necessarily feel they can get the right type of training at ordinary training clubs.
Yeah, yeah. And you, I know you spend a lot of time and effort sort of trying to educate people so that they know this before they get the dog and before it becomes a problem, don't you?
Yes, I do. I do try and put our details all over the internet and various other places, you know, dog magazines, you know, places like yourself on the internet, so that, you know, the idea is that in theory we can help these people, help them to get the puppy in the right place in the first place, you know, with a view to then them doing the right things from the word go and not just starting when they're 6 months to a year old, when it may be a little bit too late to correct some of the problems that have occurred. Yeah. You know, we do try and help people to make sure that they don't buy puppies via the internet and to only go to good breeders. Mm. And in conjunction with some other, you know, different societies that are around on the internet and in the dog world.
Yeah, yeah. Now, there's quite specific issues with toy and small dogs, aren't there? Because, I mean, I didn't realise that crime, you know, dog theft is quite a problem with them, isn't it?
Yes, unfortunately, dog theft is particularly worrying for toy dog owners because obviously the majority of toy dogs, even a lot of the so-called designer dog crossbreeds that are now out there across Chihuahuas with various different breeds, they are being stolen on a regular basis in some areas, and it is a worry. So we do find as well that a lot of people, they like coming to the group because they don't feel that they're on their own walking their dogs, and they don't actually feel confident or safe in their own areas to walk around their local parks. Myself, I have toy dogs and I have a park that is on my doorstep, but we actually get in the car and go to Greenwich Park, which is further away, because we know there's a lot of police. Mm. And it is a lot easier to, you know, safely walk your dog, particularly as part of a group. So we often meet up during the week and during the weekends with other people with toy breeds. Yeah. So that we've hopefully got safety in numbers.
Yeah, yeah. Now, another thing with a smaller dog, and I'm aware of this, we have a Bichon Frise, and it does, I feel a lot more protective of her out on walks than I do with my Labrador. You've just heard the Bichon Frise there, butting in. But I do feel protective. I'm aware that she is small and perhaps more vulnerable. And that's quite an issue with toy dogs, isn't it?
It is, and unfortunately you get a lot of maybe larger dog owners in the park that don't understand the fact that, you know, even one tooth going in could basically be fatal. Not only that, but again, you know, you are a little bit misunderstood as a toy dog owner, because if you pick your dog up, you know, you get labelled as being neurotic or highly strung, this type of thing. But I have to say, I've done obedience and behavioural training with dogs, many breeds of dogs, for many years, since I was 9 years old, when my mum had a Rottweiler in obedience at Cross. And I would not leave my dog on the floor with dogs that I don't know. I pick mine up straight away, and whether that makes me neurotic, I don't care, because I'm not going to take the chance that dog, a lot of the owners shout out, he's okay, and then their dogs have attacked dogs afterwards. Mm. You know, I could quote particularly a lot of cases from our group where people, there's a lady who's got a Papillon and her dog was actually in intensive care after a dog that was on the lead bit her dog, picked it up and shook it. And that is all it takes. And not only that, even if they're not aggressive, they could tread on them.
Yeah.
You know, little dogs, whether you've got insurance or not, you don't want them with broken legs, you know.
No.
So you do get a lot of that if you pick your dogs up. In the last 2 weeks, we unfortunately had a dog attack our group while we were out, and we're actually just waiting to see if the police are going to be proceeding under the Dangerous Dogs Act, because a dog was off the lead that is known to kill squirrels and was trying to attack the dogs. So obviously you can understand from a dog's point of view, if it killed squirrels, that if it took a look at a long-haired Chihuahua, that it probably isn't going to make a lot of difference. No. You know, it's not going to differentiate between them.
Absolutely. You know, you mentioned there that you do get sort of comments from the public, and we've had this ourselves because, you know, when they're small, particularly if we're in a crowd, we go to dog shows, and if you're in a crowd, you do think, oh my goodness, this, you know, Star, our little dog, might get trodden on. So you do tend to pick her up and carry her. Just from a practical point of view, you know, as you say, she's treated like a dog. She does obedience with my daughter, you know, and she is treated like a dog. But from a purely practical safety point of view, sometimes you do pick her up. And some people will look and go, oh, isn't she sweet? And then you do get nasty comments from other people sort of about, you know, get a proper dog or things like that. And I just don't know where that comes from and why people.
I think, unfortunately, you do get a lot of people who do make things their business, whatever it is, whether it's about your dogs,
yes,
or other aspects in while you're outside. You know, in our group, we have some members that have got arthritis or purely for practical reasons have dog buggies or dog bags. You know, and we'll walk around the park for 45 minutes, and the dogs will do more of a walk than most of the big dogs that are in that park. And you'll be right at the end of the walk and they'll have been put in the buggy so that they can have a rest because they're worn out. And you'll get people shouting abuse and saying, well, haven't they got any legs then? That's ridiculous. You should put it on the floor. It's got legs like any other dog, you know. And they don't know, you know, why should you have to defend yourself that you've walked the dog for miles before that?
Yeah,
but unfortunately, people are, in any society, you get people will make comments about things that they don't understand.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm going to come out of the closet because we do have, you know, one of the strollers. We have one of those for Stars. So, you know, I'm going to own up to that and put it out there.
Is it pink?
It is, actually. Well, we got it when she was very small because we got it before we had her because we knew she would be tiny when we first had her. And, you know, I'm thinking, she won't keep up with the Labrador. She just won't keep up on walks. Now, we used it when she was a tiny puppy.
And I imagine now it's probably more the other way around.
Oh, yes, yeah. We used it, as I say, when she was tiny, we used it just as for safety before she had her vaccinations. And then afterwards, it was quite hot that summer. And she would just, you know, veg out in it occasionally, you know, rather than put up with the hot weather. But once she was, I don't know, 7-8 months old, that was it. There was no putting her in the pushchair after that. And she just wants to run and she lies in the mud with him. And she's a real tomboy, actually. But, you know, if we want to use the pushchair, I don't see any reason, you know, I don't see anything wrong with that.
I personally feel that they're more practical and of use to people who have either got mobility problems or, you know, again, some people find it hard to walk around without something to lean on.
Yes,
so that's nice for them, whether the dogs are on the floor or not. You know, if you've got more than one dog, it's not practical to pick them all up at the same time if a vicious dog runs over. So that can be an issue if you've got tiny, small dogs, you know. But for dogs that are more than able to walk around that haven't got any mobility, you know, even the dogs, if it's a dog that might have arthritis or something like that, then really you're, you know, you probably would be wasting your money to buy one if it would be something you would only use every so often.
Yes.
But, as you know, I haven't got one personally, but my mum has one, pink, for her chihuahuas, and I do have a dog bag, but I don't use it very often, only if it's very, very cold weather in the park. You know, and that is the point, is that we are in the park whether it's freezing cold or raining or anything, and I have to say that, you know, a lot of the people that I know with dogs, they couldn't say the same. They don't have tiny little dogs. So, you know, I think people do tend to label you because they think you've got a certain type of dog.
Yeah.
That you obviously, you know, think you're a Paris Hilton lookalike, and you obviously only want to dust it off with one of your designer handbags, this type of thing. But, you know, I can honestly say that most of our members are not like that at all. They are just normal dog owners who happen to like a small dog or it suits their circumstances more than a big dog would.
Yeah.
You know, if people live in small accommodation or maybe, you know, sheltered accommodation, something like that, then obviously a small, tiny breed is going to suit them more than a Labrador or a dog that would take, you know, a lot of walking.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's the good thing about some of the toy breeds is that you can walk them according to your own needs, really. They would be quite happy to sit out and sunbathe in the garden and have a nice walk once a week, or you could walk them for a long week, you know, a long walk every day.
Yeah.
And I think they're quite good in that they really do suit your needs. You know, you wouldn't have to walk them 3 miles every day.
Yeah, yeah.
But you could if you wanted to.
Yeah, I know. And there's, I'd never lived with a small dog before the Bichon we've got now, who was my daughter's choice. But I have to say, there is such a charm to a small dog, this little dog that would jump on the sofa and just walk along the back of the sofa, more like a cat at times, you know. And there's definitely a charm to a small dog.
Yes, and I think a lot of the behaviourists, if they're listening to this, would be horrified at your dog being above you, which is unfortunately a common trait with a lot of the toy dogs, is they do like to sleep up high, and particularly on the backs of sofas. But if it's a dominant dog, it should be discouraged because they do tend to think they're, you know, queen of the castle or king, and put themselves up there and, you know, might tell children off if they come along, this type of thing. But no, it is nice because it's, if you're, you know, maybe not a cat person, but it's, you get to have a little dog that will sit on your lap, you know, and you can fuss it up in that way, or you know, they're just nice because, again, if you take them on a long walk or somewhere and it's too far, you can pick them up and carry them, or if you've got a dog bag, pop them in a bag, you know, to give them a little rest, this type of thing. But I think, unfortunately, because of a lot of the publicity that's been in the press with regards, you know, some celebrities with dogs, you do unfortunately get an element of people that, you know, shouldn't be buying a dog and end up getting these dogs. And again, they end up changing homes, and a lot of dogs are changing homes several times before they're even adults.
Yeah.
We've got two dogs ourselves that, I mean, Ruby Scrumptious, who the group is named after, was, I bought her at 16 weeks and she'd already been in another home other than the breeder before that. She was sold at 5 weeks of age, which is not uncommon from a breeder who'd bred two registered dogs together to get a so-called designer dog crossbreed.
Yeah.
They can sell them for probably more money than what you may have even paid for your purebred toy breed. Some of the crossbreeds are going for £800 or more. You know, so this is why I try and help people, because what you get is some people will look on some of the websites online where a purebred Chihuahua may be going for £2,000 to £3,000, and they'll think, well, I can't afford one of those, so I'll go and get a cross Chihuahua on the same website, which may only be £500 to £800. Well, if they went about it via the proper channels and got one via a, you know, a reputable breeder from the Chihuahua Club or whatever breed it is, you know, someone that they can find that's suitable, then they probably would be ending up paying less money than what the crossbreed was in the first place. So, you know, this is how we try and help people. You know, we were recently quite lucky that we had a large feature done about us in dog, Your Dog magazine. So from that alone, I had, you know, for 5 weeks, my phone didn't stop ringing first thing in the morning to last thing in the evening with people who were desperately trying to find a Chihuahua or another, you know, Papillon, Pekingese pugs, and they just don't know where to start. So they immediately look online, which unfortunately is probably where they end up going wrong, because there's a lot of paid places now. You know, I don't really want to name them in case it makes someone go there, but they've taken over from what used to be the Exchange and Mart and places like that, in that now they can go online and instantly see a picture of a little fluffy puppy, you know, and be able to go and get it straight away when, this, you know, they might not be in the best of circumstances to have one in the first place.
No.
Situation is such that they shouldn't have a dog. Perhaps they're out at work all day, there's nobody there, you know, or they just are not prepared to be at home with a dog, and they want to go away on holidays, and, you know, they don't actually want to have a dog, they just think it seems like a good idea. You know, so this is, I'll be honest with people, and if they contact me and they say, well, I'm out at work all day, then I'll say to them, I don't really think you should be getting a dog. You know, because I don't breed dogs, so I think really I'm in a good position to give independent and unbiased information. Not, if I was a breeder, I obviously would be saying, oh yes, of course, you should be getting one, you know. I mean, not to say all breeders are like that, because, you know, some of the good breeders will say, no, you can't have one of my dogs, but unfortunately a lot of the breeders that are selling puppies on the internet will sell to anybody that's got the money available. You know, so in these circumstances, I had a short while ago a man contact me who had a pair of Chihuahua puppies, and they're out all day long, there's nobody at home, you know, and they don't actually seem to have the first clue about looking after dogs, but they just go out and get them, and then afterwards they'll end, you know, not so much that man, but in general they tend to end up getting rid of them because they don't know what to do with them, and the fact that they've paid a lot of money for them in the first place doesn't make any difference to them. If people, you know, are not prepared, then they end up getting rid of them. Or so, you know, we're quite lucky that because we don't breed, I just think it, you know, you can give unbiased information and not just what suits you because you want to get rid of a puppy or this type of thing.
Well, I know you've got lots of information on the website, and obviously if people contact you direct, you can give more help about sort of how to avoid these problems. So what is your website, Michelle?
Our website, as I said before, is named after my dog, Ruby Scrumptious. So it is just www.rubyscrumptious.com.
Great. And
or you can also find us via the meetup.com website, which is a large social networking site that originated in America, but is now taking off over here as well. So whereas Facebook and places like that are more online, the idea of the meetup group is that it's to meet up offline. So there are groups for every interest on there. And if there isn't one for your interest, you can just set one up.
Oh, excellent. Oh, that's great.
You do have to pay monthly to use their site, but it's just been great for us because it's given us a lot of things that we wouldn't have been able to build into our website ourselves. So, you know, then it means that if we make an event, it will send out the details to everybody on our list that's a member. And we do, for security, we have made it a private group so that we're, you know, we know that nobody other than our members will be aware that we're meeting up on that day.
Yeah, yeah, that's very sensible. Well, I'm sure you've helped a lot of small dog owners and people who are thinking about owning small dogs, but also maybe people with bigger dogs, we've helped educate them a bit.
Well, hopefully. I mean, you know, I always say to people, I've got nothing against big dogs. You know, and I've had a lot of different breeds. I used to actually handle a Rottweiler in obedience, and we've had a lot of rescue Rottweilers over the years. But, you know, I think as long as you're sensible, there's nothing, you know, yourself, you've got a large dog with a small breed.
Yes.
And I think with any breeds, as long as people go about things the right way, you know, and they appreciate that even if they do work, that there's someone in the house, you know, that the longest you're leaving them for is a couple of hours, this type of thing.
Yeah.
You know, there's no reason that big dogs and small dogs can't be together.
Mm.
We've got an old Rottweiler girl, and she absolutely loves tiny breeds.
Yeah.
And our last sort of rescue that came via ePups, she was rescued at 6.5 weeks of age, and she'd already been in two homes.
Oh,
and she was kind of near to death when my mum had to pay for her, and, you know, she wasn't free. But when she brought her home, she's always loved her Rottweiler, and she tries to climb in her mouth. It's, but if you saw it, you'd probably be horrified. But,
yeah.
You know, they do. They all love each other.
Yes.
It doesn't matter what breeds of dogs they are.
No.
But
no. I don't think they have a clue what size they are at
no.
all. They just play together, don't they?
Not at all. Yeah, we were actually speaking to a lady at the Macmillan show this week, and I think she's got an interest in wolves.
Hmm.
And she was saying, you know, there's no difference between the breeds. They all think that they're the same. They
yes.
don't appreciate what their size is. And this is the problem with buying dogs that are older, is that with my own dog, I've had to do a lot of training with her, because when I got her, she'd been in another home and they hadn't socialized her and they hadn't done any training with her. In fact, they hadn't actually taken her out, I don't think. They had bought everything imaginable in pink to, you know, spoil her, so they weren't horrible people, but they didn't have much of an idea about what to do with her. And because of that, and because of the fact that she'd, you know, had 11 weeks running around with a toddler grabbing at her, and you know, various other things that you wouldn't necessarily recommend, she still now, 2 years later, or 3 years later now, you know, she's been a problem with other dogs. So I've done a lot of training to get her to the point she is at now. But when we first got her, she wouldn't even have you pick her up, because if you put your hands out, she obviously thought you were going to pinch her.
Oh.
You know, and I think dogs do have long memories with things like that.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, so even now, you know, I've taken her. She's been at Discover Dogs. She was on the Chihuahua stand this year. Well, last year, and had thousands of people petting her up. You know, when I got her, there's no way that anybody would have been able to stroke her like that. So that's, you know, what I like about mixing, and that's why I actually set the group up in the first place, was that when I had a look round, although I've done obedience training for years and I know all the obedience clubs that are in the area, there wasn't really anything that was geared towards small dogs, not tiny dogs. You know, obviously, you can take them along to any of these clubs because, you know, they don't restrict it. But I found that walking around a class with a big dog in front and a big dog behind her, it just scared the life out of her. You know, it made her more nervous than she was in the first place.
Mm.
The first thing she had was a Doberman jump up to say hello and nearly poked her in the eye with its toenail.
Oh.
You know, it wasn't aggressive,
no,
but
no.
It scared her. So this is what you're up against, is that in most of the training classes, they're not really familiar with small breeds.
No.
You know, and again, and I find that a lot of the clubs locally, perhaps, they run puppy classes where they have solely put puppies with puppies. You know, so socialising a Chihuahua puppy, which is microscopically small, you know,
yes.
with a St. Bernard puppy, isn't necessarily the best way to go about socialising them.
No.
You know, whereas some of the other clubs will only do classes where all dogs go in together, whether they're big, small, puppies or whatever, which is a better idea. But at ours, they know that if they come along, that they're only going to be dogs of a certain height, you know, a certain size, and they're not necessarily going to get trampled by a big dog.
Yes.
You know, and everybody, we've got different members of different, you know, mobility between, you know, whether people can walk a long distance or a short distance. So we tend to make sure that all our meetups are, you know, depending on who's there, we make it suitable to those people that are there. So if there's someone, you know, in a wheelchair, then we wouldn't go on a downhill walk and this type of thing. So,
yeah. You
know, nothing's rigid. Whereas a lot of the clubs, you know, you go along and everything's exactly the same every week, you know. Whereas with ours, it's just nice that we can sort of go places and do things. And, you know, we're lucky in that some of our boutiques, we have arrangements with them where our members will get discounts at their particular shops and stands at shows, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So we do also have trips up to places. We're having strawberries and champagne at Holly and Lil's shortly, and we went to a Chihuahua garden party last year and did some filming with Trini and Susanna. And
well,
so we don't only just meet up at the park, you know, we do try and socialise and make it, you know, it's not just about walking around the park at 100 miles an hour and getting your walk out the way. It's, you know, it is a sociable event. So, you know, again, I would say if someone has one of the bigger toy breeds and they do like walking particularly fast, you know, it isn't necessarily going to be for them, because we do like to make it a sociable event, and there's a lot of chatting and coffee drinking involved as well, you know.
Oh, it sounds
so
great.
We do like to stop off and... you know, and again, our meetups in the afternoon at the park usually last for sort of 4 or 5 hours, so we don't just whiz round and go home.
Yeah, yeah. Michelle, you're obviously helping a lot of people, and thanks for taking the time out to talk to me.
Thank you.
So there you go. Toy breeds are great, and stop making fun of people with dog strollers. To find out more about Michelle and the group, visit their website, rubyscrumptious.com, which we have a link to. And if you run or attend a great walking group, whatever the size of dogs, let us know and we can let everyone else know. The American Kennel Club lists 21 toy breeds, while the British Kennel Club has 23.
Hello and welcome to the Dogcast Radio News Desk. I'm Nick.
And I'm Kate. The world's first cloned sniffer dogs have started work in a South Korean airport. The dogs have been cloned from a Canadian-born sniffer dog called Chase, and are all confusingly called Tuppy, a combination of the word tomorrow and puppy. Cloning has apparently helped the success rate of dogs completing their training. Usually, only 30% of dogs pass the course, but 90% of cloned dogs succeed. The dogs were cloned by the team that created the first clone dog, Snuppy, at Seoul National University.
Clone dogs may be looked on as oddities, but a very unusual dog in New York, America, has been rescued from being an exhibit in a Coney Island freak show. Allison Siegel paid $4,000 for Lily, a five-legged Chihuahua cross puppy, and when her good deed received publicity, a specialist veterinary practice offered to remove the pup's extra leg for free. New Yorkers have been expressing their delight at Siegel's good deed, with comments posted on various websites referring to her as an angel and urging the rescue of all the other animals still stuck in the freak show.
Women in Australia certainly love their dogs, with single women more likely to have a dog as a companion than a man. Some of the reasons behind women choosing canines over human partners include them being more reliable, providing a sense of security, and, of course, offering companionship. Apparently, it's young women seeking a relationship substitute that have caused the rise of the Maltese Terrier, which is now Australia's second most popular dog.
Canine communication has hit the headlines recently in a variety of ways. First of all, there was the gadget that claimed to translate your dog's woofs into words. The bilingual voice is a Japanese toy, which can apparently detect if your dog is expressing sadness, joy, alertness to danger, neediness, happiness, or frustration, and put that into phrases such as, "Play with me." There is a microphone which goes round the dog's neck to pick up his utterances, and a handheld box for the human to hold and listen to. Mind you, at £129, That's around $212, perhaps your dog might be just saying, don't waste your money, buy me some dog food instead.
And maybe what you actually need to translate for your dog is a baby, because scientists at Brigham Young University in Utah, USA, found that babies as young as 6 months old understand whether a dog's bark is friendly or angry. In a trial, babies from 6 months of age were shown photos of a dog in an aggressive stance and a dog in a friendly stance. When they were played aggressive or friendly dog sounds, they looked at the corresponding photo, showing that they correctly detected the emotion being expressed.
However, just to cast doubt on the whole subject, yet another study suggests that not only do dogs not bark with specific messages in mind, but that other animals such as birds, monkeys, and deer make a similar sound. While dogs do bark to deter intruders or challenges, that's allegedly as specific as their thinking gets. In general, mammals make low-pitched noises to warn others off, such as a growl, while higher-pitched noises convey friendliness.
And finally, two dogs were found wandering the streets in Norfolk in the UK. Not an uncommon occurrence, you might think, but these dogs are very unusual, as one is blind and the other acts as his guide. The pair has been named Bonnie and Clyde, and the shelter who took them in decided that the devoted pair must be rehomed together. After 500 people came forward wanting to take the pair on, they have been found a loving new home. And that's all from us on the Dogcast Radio News Desk. Goodbye.
The Pug and the Cavalier King Charles Spaniel are the largest toy breeds, while the Chihuahua is the smallest. Jenny and her dog Star recently passed their Kennel Club Good Citizen Gold Award and came to join Buddy and me in the next class up. This involves more off-lead work, lots of heel work drills, and some quite complicated exercises. I have to say, it's also great fun and there is so much laughter. But Jenny found it was quite difficult. So this week, she suggested we swap. And she worked with Buddy, who has been doing the class for a while and is usually well-behaved. Meanwhile, I would work with Star. I was happy with the arrangement as it suited us both. Jenny wanted a dog that would do what she asked, and I was looking forward to a challenge. In the event, it just didn't work. Star kept looking where Jenny was. Though she loves me, I'm not her specific person, and she's not food-motivated, so I found it very hard. Meanwhile, Buddy isn't used to Jenny's training style and kept losing focus. Halfway through, we swapped back. I guess dogs aren't like cars. You can't just swap over. It's not how it works. As part of the class, we're often required to work each other's dogs, and it's interesting to observe how the dogs react. Buddy will follow anyone who offers him a treat. But last night, I found myself having to handle a feisty border collie called Millie, who was intent on only one thing, getting back to her person. I tried working her off-lead and offering the best treats I had on me, all to no avail. My instructor suggested putting her on lead, which I did, and spent the rest of that exercise with my arms being wrenched out of their sockets, ploughing up and down the field in a parody of a water skiing position behind Millie, who was desperately trailing her person. Last night, the laughs were definitely on me. I love going to training, and I think from their behaviour the dogs do too. It's wonderful to see the progress the dogs make. I wonder if the dogs are pleased to see the progress we make as handlers. Till next time, look after yourselves and your dogs.
Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121 288 0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315 849 2022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121 288 0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio.
By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
Why do dogs lie down? Because they can't lie up.